Well, good afternoon, everyone, and greetings to you on the webcast or whenever you happen to be viewing this. Gospel, gospel everywhere. When I came into the Church of God, I read the Bible cover to cover, and I imagine that many of us did that when we were new, and some still read it through every year. Anyway, I found the book of Leviticus to be kind of hard to understand, especially the chapters on the sacrifices. And apparently I'm not alone in this opinion. Quote, "For many believers, Leviticus feels distant and difficult, filled with sacrifices, feasts, and laws that seem far removed from modern Christian life." Well, they're maybe not so distant and difficult for us. We already accept the holy days and quit eating unclean meats. But the sacrifices still seemed very foreign to me. Why so much detail about something that was supposedly done away, fulfilled in Jesus? Well, sometime later, I read the book, The Law of the Offerings by Andrew Jukes. And it showed me the symbolism in the sacrifices. And then they made a lot more sense and became almost interesting. Another quote, "The offerings are a type of Jesus Christ and a description of his sacrifice for us." Now, the word type has a specific meaning here. It isn't just a word invented by academics. Basically, a type means the same as symbolism or prefigure or foreshadow. A type in the Old Testament is typically fulfilled in the New Testament and very often in the person of Jesus Christ. The fulfillment is called the antitype. And my reference for that is the Bible itself. We just have to look up past the English in some of these translations into the Greek behind the verses. This won't take long. For example, Romans 5:14, it just flat out says in the ESV anyway, "Adam, who was a type of the one who was to come." And the word type in Greek is typos or tupos. I'm not entirely certain how to pronounce it. In 1 Corinthians 10:6, it says, "Now these things took place as examples for us." The word examples is translated from the Greek tupos. And in 1 Peter 3:21, the Berean Standard Bible says, "And this water symbolizes the baptism that now saves you," and symbolizes the word anti-tupos. Anyway, so consider this type from the Law of the Offerings by Jukes. It says, Christ is the offering. Christ is the priest. Christ is the offerer. Well, it's possible that in time I might have figured this out on my own when I was new. After all, there are clues in the New Testament. Hebrews 10:12 says, "But when Christ had offered all for all time a single sacrifice for sins, he sat down at the right hand of God." Sacrifice for all sins, he's the offering. Hebrews 4:14 says, "Therefore, since we have a great high priest who has passed through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let's hold firmly to our confession." So Christ is the priest. I mean, it says that, but I'm not sure I would have ever put that together. I'm not sure when I would have ever realized that Jesus is both high priest and the sacrifice in the same offering. In Jukes' own words, he says, "The varieties in the typical offerings represent different aspects of Christ's one offering, the different offerings giving us different aspects of his offering." My point today is not to go into the depths on the offerings, maybe someday, but to show that the Old Testament is full of types, especially types that point to Jesus and hence the gospel. For me, Juke's book was an introduction to that idea of types. I like this particular quote from the Bible Project that says, "The Bible is a unified story that leads to Jesus." We see types very early in Genesis. The quote I mentioned earlier, Romans 5:14, says that Adam is a type of the one to come, meaning Jesus. We can look at 1 Corinthians 15:45 that says, "Thus it is written, the first man, Adam, became a living being, and the last Adam, Jesus, became a life-giving spirit." In Genesis 2, the Sabbath is introduced. Well, is that not a type of the 7,000-year plan of God? And of course, there are many, many Old Testament verses that are actual prophecies of Jesus, the kingdom, the gospel, but they're not types, so I'm not going to be talking about them today. I'm talking about types, especially types that prefigure Jesus. Some Old Testament characters prefigure or typify Jesus, but not necessarily their whole life, but maybe in one aspect, like Jonah in the belly of the fish for 3 days typifies Jesus being in the grave for 3 days. But Jonah also tried to run away from God, and I would not consider that a type of Jesus. Not every detail is typological. Types should not be overanalyzed to extract hidden meanings from every detail of the Old Testament text. That was a quote, by the way. So of the dozens of figures in the Old Testament that typify Jesus in some way, and I've already referred to a few, I picked three to talk about a little bit more: Joseph, Joshua, and Boaz. Starting with Joseph, it's the sheer number of parallels that makes Joseph a fascinating type for Jesus. Many of these that I'm going to mention follow in the same order in both of their lives. Let's start with, they're both beloved sons sent by their fathers. Jacob gave Joseph a special coat, then he sent him alone into hostile territory to check on his brothers. God the Father set Jesus apart and sent him alone into hostile territory, that is, to his people. Both were hated by their brothers. Joseph's brothers hated him and could not speak a kind word to him. Jesus came to his own, and his own did not receive him. Both were stripped of their clothes. The brothers tore Joseph's coat off his back before they sold him. The Roman soldiers stripped Jesus of his robe before they crucified him. Both were sold for silver. Joseph was sold by his brother Judah to the Ishmaelites for 20 pieces of silver. Jesus was sold by his disciple Judas to the chief priests for 30 pieces of silver. I'm not sure if that represents inflation or what. But note that they had the same name. Judas is just the Greek form of Judah. They were both placed in a pit. Before he was sold, Joseph was thrown into an empty cistern, kind of a grave for the living. Before his resurrection, Jesus was placed in an empty tomb. Both were falsely accused. Potiphar's wife accused Joseph of a crime he did not commit, and the Sanhedrin produced false witnesses against Jesus. You see what I mean about the number of parallels between them. Both were imprisoned with two criminals. In prison, Joseph met Pharaoh's cupbearer and Pharaoh's baker. He interpreted their dreams. One was restored to life, the other was executed. On the cross, Jesus hung between two criminals. He spoke to both. One was promised paradise, one was not. Both were raised up after their suffering. Joseph spent years in prison before he was elevated to power. Jesus spent 3 days in the tomb before he was raised to glory. Both were given all authority. Pharaoh placed Joseph over his entire kingdom, and Jesus was given all authority in heaven and on earth. Both provided bread that saved the world, at least the known world at the time. Pharaoh placed, when the famine came, Joseph distributed the grain that he had stored. Jesus said, "I am the bread of life." A lot can be said about that. Their own brothers did not recognize them. When Joseph's brothers came to Egypt for grain, they stood face to face with him, and they didn't know it was him. After the resurrection, Mary thought that Jesus was the gardener. The disciples walked 7 miles on the road to Emmaus and did not recognize him. Joseph and Jesus both forgave their betrayers. Joseph's brothers were terrified. Joseph wept and said, "You meant evil against me, but God meant it for good." And Jesus, from the cross, said, "Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do." That's a lot of parallels between those two lives. Moving on to Joshua. After the death of Moses, God chose Joshua to lead Israel into the promised land, securing rest for the nation. Christ is the greater Joshua leading his people into the eternal rest of God's kingdom. The name Jesus is derived from Joshua, sometimes spelled Yahushua, sometimes spelled Yeshua. And the names Joshua and Jesus mean Yah will save. And Yah is God's shortened name, as in Hallelujah. All of which makes this particular verse make sense. Matthew 1:24 says, "She will bear a son, and you shall call his name Jesus, for he will save his people from their sins." That doesn't make any sense in English, but when you realize that the name Jesus means Yah will save, then it makes sense. Moving on to Boaz. Boaz and Jesus both belonged to the tribe of Judah, and they were both from Bethlehem. Boaz performed a lot of deeds of kindness towards Ruth, and Jesus performed loads and loads of deeds of kindness towards Israel, be it leper, demon-possessed tax collector, sick, Samaritan women, beggars. But the most important type pictured by Boaz is that of kinsman redeemer. The redemption by Boaz is a picture of what God had done by redeeming Israel from bondage in Egypt and would do when he was on earth and in the future for Israel. At incredible cost to himself, Jesus redeemed sinners. But not just anyone could redeem the person in distress. It had to be family. And this is a type of Jesus coming in the flesh to be a family member to all mankind. He is our Redeemer and a kinsman. Boaz is the only human kinsman Redeemer featured in the whole Old Testament. So, conclusion, the so what part. What we see many, many people who typify Jesus in some aspect of their lives. We also see stories like the Exodus, which point to the great work that Christ will do, delivering his people and establishing his kingdom. We see Jesus' redemption of mankind in the story of Boaz and Ruth. We see the holy days repeatedly point to aspects of Jesus' ministry. He's the Passover lamb. He's the wave sheaf offering, which was accepted by God. He's the king who returns on the day of trumpets. He's the goat for the Lord on the Day of Atonement. We see the life foreshadowed in the tabernacle itself, in its furnishings, and in the rituals like the sacrificial offerings, which is where I started. We see types in the seventh-day Sabbath and in the phrase the third day, as in the story of Jonah, or when Abraham lifted his eyes up on the third day, the binding of Isaac. In other words, we see the gospel everywhere in the Old Testament. And you can find many more examples just by searching for Old Testament types of Jesus. And as usual, the references will all be in the transcript.